Hello everyone, I'm Diego and I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Orlando, Florida. My home group is Psychic Change Young People's Group. And I'm nervous. I last took a drink on March 5th of 2007. I kind of started off on my own and had an adventure with that. And eventually I started getting with the AA, kind of, you know, going to meetings and things seemed to have gotten better. I came really unprepared, but I'll just talk a little bit about my experience, strength, and hope on this matter. I'm a photographer by trade with a large media organization, and I'm also the webmaster for FICCIPAW, which is the Florida Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. I maintain that website as well as some other ancillary websites related to it. But, you know, I think that in this day and age, you know, there is no getting around. There's a lot of debate about what is anonymity, especially on the internet, and is it appropriate, is it not appropriate? I don't really want to address that because there's, you know, a gazillion answers that we never finish. But I think that as our society changes, the internet becomes more a prevalent factor in our daily lives that we're not going to be able to get around. It's been a useful tool because my beginnings in AA came from the internet. I reached out to a YPAR organization in California, which is where I used to live. But in doing the website, I don't really get involved with too many online meetings, but we have a lot of chatter on our website with some newcomers and other interested people, you know, and they talk back and forth, and I see all of their messages. And, you know, we've had a lot of issues with people would like to give me their opinion on what the website should look like and how it should operate and what you should be able to say and not say, you know, and that's all great feedback, and I try to accommodate as most as I can, but I think for me, you know, it got really crazy for a while because everyone told me what they didn't like, but they didn't tell me what they did like, and people weren't able to really interact with our website. I sat down one day, and I realized that instead of making a very complicated website that you can do everything under the sun, and just keep it simple, deliver the information, have good, clear links for people who want to stop drinking and how to get a hold of us and how we can help them get to AA meetings. That's really the core of our mission, both as individuals and as for FICCIPAW, you know. And I think that going back to just trying to keep it simple and helping people understand that there is help and you're not alone, you know, really made the site successful that is. We have an incredible amount of hits now on our site, and I think it just came from removing all the excess junk that looked cool and just giving a spot for people to read, post their comments, post their feedback, and email us back and forth. And we've reached out to several people. We've had quite a few newcomers, you know, come to various meetings around the Orlando area because of it. And it's worked out really well, you know. I've attended a few online meetings. I'm not per se an online person for meetings, but they're good and they're tool. I heard a story not too long ago about a gentleman who was in Mexico, which is actually where I was born, and he doesn't speak Spanish. And he couldn't find a meeting, but he had his laptop and he found a Wi-Fi and he found an online meeting. And he was going through some hard times, but that online meeting helped him, you know. So there's value in it, you know. I think what's really sad, though, is like our organization, FICCIPAW, has a Facebook page. It's set to private. You can't find it. And if you look at my profile on Facebook, you won't see that I belong to it. But I noted the other day, about 2 weeks ago, I gave a talk to a district in Florida about anonymity in the internet. And I found over 6,000 pages that are either say AA, Friends of AA, Bill W. I started looking around more, and I found more and more people that had their profiles set to public. And they talked and they talked about recovery. And that's great that they want to recover. I applaud that. I didn't see anyone talk about the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, you know, or even the 12 concepts. I didn't see anyone talk about the Serenity Prayer. I didn't see anything in a traditional AA format. That bothers me because without our steps and our traditions, those are kind of what I see as a bedrock to how we move forward. And without it, I think that they're just jumping from one disaster to the next with periods of serenity. That's my opinion. I watched some of these people's profile now, and they were cyclic. They would just go from good to bad, good to bad. A lot of people were breaking their anonymity. You know, there's lots of questions about exactly how far you can go in breaking it. My own opinion is if you say you are in AA publicly, then you've broken it. If you identify yourself with AA, you've broken it. That's my opinion, though. I realize that, you know, there's probably a billion. You know, but I'll leave it at that. So I started realizing that there's a lot of unintended consequences to breaking our anonymity. I was reading an article in the Denver Post from 2006, and it was about an online meeting that went awry. And the short end of the story is a lady who was feeling, you know, down, I guess she was hitting her bottom, came into one of these meetings, these online meetings, and revealed too much information about herself. Someone else in that meeting, though, was fairly unscrupulous, who later committed some crimes against her. I won't go into the details of it, but you can see how, while we might have the right idea, that doesn't mean that everyone in there has the same intention. You know, so it's a matter of safety also, I think. You know, I had a picture posted of me. I was in Jacksonville for an event, and I had a picture posted of me. It was an innocuous picture. I didn't know it was taken. And it didn't say anything about AA, but I started looking at the picture, and I noticed that there was a big book next to me. And I was like, well, you know, I debated about it for a couple of days, like, did that really break my anonymity or not? But I realized that, you know, the people I work with, they read my Facebook too. And I don't want to answer questions that I'm not comfortable answering to the general public about. So I politely asked the person to remove it, and that person did, and it was all good. The person is a friend of mine who I still trust, and I know that it was not intended. But that's kind of where I'm going is so often there's unintended consequences to breaking our anonymity, you know, especially online when everything is searchable about all of us, unfortunately, you know. So, again, I looked at my Facebook. You know, I kind of cleaned it, so to speak, of information. I created a second profile, you know, with a different alias. And I let whatever get posted there because I never check it very often. But I guess I would just say that there is hope. Online meetings, web pages, social media, they all can help. They can help a lot, but they need to be used what I feel is correctly. We shouldn't be, you know, posting everything about our AA lives on there, you know. After I, you know, kind of worked on our website and kind of cleaned it up and worked on my Facebook and stuff, I found that a lot of people started messaging me that they liked it. It was just simple. I put an example of if you're going to post a comment, please just leave your name and maybe your city. Don't give your last name. Because I was surprised at some of the comments that were coming in with people giving out their phone numbers. And there's a person that was trying to hook up with another girl on our website. You know, so, you know, the comments go through me, so I obviously don't let those get posted. But, you know, You know, and I had to create some filters because some people like to use colorful metaphors, you know. So, but, you know, it all works out good. I don't know that I have anything, honestly, I don't think I have anything that relevant to tell you that you don't know. Most of you are probably far smarter than me. I'm just, you know, here to explain what's going on in my life and how AA has impacted me in relation to online, you know. Uh-oh, my timer stopped working. Sorry. But I think that as we go forward into the new millennium, there's going to be a lot of changes. But I think that what keeps our organization successful, what keeps us stable, and what helps us recover is that we carry the message and we remember our traditions and we remember anonymity. And when we do those things, you know, sometimes you feel like you weren't very successful at that moment, but give it a little bit of time. I found that you sometimes reached out to people more than you realized, and you helped someone more than you realized, and you did it while keeping within our traditions and our steps, you know. And it's what keeps us healthy, I think. And I, at least that's what I think, you know. That's about it. That's all I can really think to say from my experience. But it's been a good experience, and I look forward to the future, really. I was sitting outside earlier, and I realized that I really have a lot to be grateful for because I'm one of those guys that came from L.A. that grew up, you know, in the gangs and stuff like that. Now I have an honest job, I make good money, and somebody from GSO invited me to speak here. And I've met an incredible amount of people from all over the globe here, and it's like, this would have never happened to me if I was in my old ways. And it was online that I first got started. So it does work. So I just keep coming back.
Thank you so much, Diego. Our next speaker is Doug from Tohunga, California.
Thank you. My name is Doug Rowell. I'm a grateful alcoholic. I'm grateful to be an alcoholic, and I'm grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm very grateful to be able to talk at the 75th anniversary of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I'm just, I love talking, you know, and I mean, I wanted to be the speaker at the first meeting I ever went to, and they didn't ask me. I was a little drunk that night, and but I think talking at an AA meeting is the most fun you can have with your pants on, you know. It's just, I just like it. However, I got the letter in February to come and lead a meeting, a different meeting, and I thought, you know, okay, and I emailed him back and told him, yeah, that's good. Then I got a call about a month ago that said, instead of that, they would like me to be part of the panel for this meeting, AA in Cyberspace, carrying the message. And I told Rick W. that had called me, I'm flattered and honored, but I can think of, you know, and I've been involved in peripherally in AA online for 14 years, but I can think of three or four people off the top of my head that are more qualified to serve on that panel. And he said, look, two people recommended you. My work is done here. And for a moment, I put myself in the position of trying to find three panel leaders each for 150 meetings and said, okay, I get it. When I got sober, my sobriety date is June 7th, 1987, and my home group is the Winner's Attitude Adjustment Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet every day of the year at 7 a.m. At the First Presbyterian Church in North Hollywood. If you're ever in that area at 7 a.m., we'd love to have you come by. It's the best meeting in the country as far as I'm concerned. My sponsor is Dick M. From Bellevue, Nebraska, and I have another home group, the Lampoons online group, and it's a small online group that's been going for about 14 years, and 13 or 14 years, and there's members here today from that group. Before I got sober, I first came to AA in 1986, and just before that, my dad is a scientist. He is an electronics engineer, and he designed computer chips for the government, the war effort, you know, for the defense effort, defense hardware, and so he was a computer designer. He was a computer guy, and way back, and my daughter attended a progressive grammar school where she was learning Mac stuff, and so she and my dad, my daughter was about, you know, 8 or 9 years old, and she and my dad would talk about bits and chips and mainframes and hardware and software and VOS and DOS and Java and stuff I had no clue about, and I just felt like the lost generation right in the middle, So, because I was around it a little bit, when I got sober in 86, most people didn't have computers. Today, almost everyone either has a computer or is one that's available to them, or we have one on our phone. So when in 1995, I went to the San Diego International Convention the International AA Convention that was held in San Diego, and they had a room called Living Cyber, and I went in and checked it out. And this was the first time I ever knew that you could go to meetings online. So the next year, I traded in my old Apple IIc that I used to use for, you know, keeping my checkbook, and some Apple IIc users here. Yeah! How about Commodore? Can we get a, Anyway, I traded in on a Mac Performer, which had an overwhelming 365 gigs, megs of memory, and I had, I think I was a 14 KBPS modem. Yeah, it was like, you know, it was real slow, you know, but it got me on the internet, and the first thing I got on the internet, I want to go to meetings, and I heard about lamplighters. There was an article in the Grapevine in 96 about lamplighters, and I joined it, and it was the big international group of 800 people or so, and I got real involved, something happened, an interesting thing happened with that. I love that there was a lot of humor, there was a lot of love. There was a lot of 12-stepping and 12-tradition talk. There was a great source for AA history, and there was every once in a while somebody would come on. I remember this girl named Ari from Tel Aviv that got involved in Lamplighters, and she came on. She joined up, and you know when people would join, they'd tell everybody, and so she started to share a little bit. I think I'm an alcoholic. I can't stop drinking, and people saying, yeah, well, it might be then if you can't stop drinking. But I haven't been to a meeting. I know there's meetings around, but this is a good way to get to know people. And everybody was loving and generous with her, you know, for about a week or two. And then people started saying, you need to get to an F2F meeting, a face-to-face meeting. And she would say, you know, I'm kind of nervous to go over. You guys are really helping me. But the longer she came on, the more people were saying, you need to go to F2F. You know, and I had friends that were saying, ooh, you're going to meetings online? You know, geez, I don't know about anonymity, and I don't know, but I like to be where, you know, you can hug them and you can see their face and look in their eyes and stuff, and that's good. But what happened was this gal, Ari, and hundreds of others, but just as an example, Ari was finally saying, well, maybe I will, I'm going to shoot just to shut people up, you know, maybe I will go to a meeting, and so then people from all over the world started finding the addresses and times of meetings. They're sending her the cyber directory, you know, and finally she said, okay, I went, you know, and great, did you get a sponsor? And you would see her progression daily or weekly on that. And finally, what happened was Lamplighters got was a little overwhelming for me because it was daily. There was 100 or more pieces of email every day, and also there's about 5% of the people that take advantage of that online anonymity to be mean. You know, to just be really nasty with people, so I got tired of trying to sift through all the great stuff, the nasty stuff to get to the great stuff, and all the stuff. So I finally bailed, and several of us bailed about the same time. And this doctor, a friend of ours from Washington, D.C., decided that she would contact some of us that had bailed or were talking about bailing and start this little online group called Lampoons. Well, she started an online group. We didn't know what to call it. We were thinking something to do with lamps or something. You know, I wanted to call it footlights or headlights or something, and somebody came up with the name Lampoons. And so we've been going for at least 13 years, maybe 14 years. And, you know, every day when I get up in the morning and I turn on my computer and I look at my email and there's this, there's messages, not every day, but it's sort of like Lampoons is not an AA meeting. And we're not really restricted to the things that you would talk about in an AA meeting. It's more like smoking cigarettes out on the porch after the meeting, you know, or before the meeting, you know. But we're all AA members, and there's about 20, 25 of us, and almost half of the membership is here in this room today. In fact, Chuck, our leader, is a member of that group, and. It's the only AA member, only AA online meeting that I actually am a member of. In fact, I try to tell this to Rick, and he said, "Hey, my work's done here." And I thought, you know, made me feel like I remember hearing one time Abraham Lincoln when somebody asked him after he was elected president, "How does it feel to be president?" He said, "Well, I feel like the man who was tarred and about to be tarred and feathered and run out of town on a rail, except for the honor I had just as soon pass." And that's about how I feel. You know, I don't know if I'm qualified to do this, but it's interesting that from the 1995 convention to 15 years later at is that where we are? Yeah, 15 years later at 2010, and. The technology is so normal now. It's just part of our daily lives. I mean, if Bill Wilson had had what we have now when he went to Akron for his failed corporate takeover, you know, he wouldn't have had to pace the Mayflower lobby for a church directory. I mean, he could have just Googled Oxford Group and would have. Maybe come up with Reverend Tunks or maybe even Henrietta Seiberling ask her the questions, and I could just see her, you know, MapQuest the address, Bill, and come right over here. And I could see Henrietta, you know, getting on to OMG, Ann. Guy from NY here with the 411 on Bob's drinking, you know. Come on, OVR, and would text back, LOL, BFF, Bob's DOA, maybe 2MRO, you know, I see people, young people sitting in our meetings today and texting, you know, and it's just, you just, sometimes I'm very tolerant and loving, and other times I say, put that goddamn phone away. And I feel divinely directed whichever way I go. And sitting in meetings with Bluetooth on, you know, I say, what are you expecting, a liver transplant or what? I wish I had Bluetooth when I was new, because, you know, everybody was coming up to me and said, "You're new, aren't you?" And I'd be like, "Oh, no, I'm not new in the sense I've never been in, but I'm not new like a new member. I'm not staying. I'm just here to see what it is. I'm checking out the thing. I'm sort of auditing the class." You know, I'm like, if I had a Bluetooth, I could have gone, "Excuse me, I'm in a conversation, you know." There's nothing that silently claims, you know, I'm very important. I may get a call any second and have to leave. But they didn't have Bluetooth when I got sober. They didn't have cell phones when I got sober. I mean, they had mobile phones in 86, but they were big. They were in briefcases. You know, only like doctors had them. They were expensive, and producers had them. And I didn't have one. I didn't even have a pager. People had pagers when I got sober. I mean, I didn't have one because nobody wanted to contact me. But I would have had a pager if they'd had pagers. They're like, "Don't come over here, pagers." You know, it's like, "Whoop, can't go there." You know, "Whoop, can't go there either." But I didn't have a pager. But I had, you know, what I had was a. Garage door opener with a belt clip. You want to look important, you know, and it's real handy too. If you're a practicing alcoholic, And you're in a conversation with people who are like Earth people, you know, and your drink alarm goes off and said, hey, get out of here. Go get a drink, you know. I mean, that happens. And you can just go, oh, I got to get this, you know. Excuse me, I'll be right back. And it's cool unless somebody says, what is that? Looks like my garage door opener. Yeah, it is. It's a combination garage door opener, pager, and TV remote. You know, it's the latest, coolest thing. I got texted. I went to talk in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I walked down to breakfast, and my friend Carla was sitting there with her phone. Said I was just going to text you, and see if you wanted to have lunch. I said, well, I'm here. Let's have breakfast. And so we had breakfast. So she didn't even have to text me. We've been texting a bit now because we ended up having breakfast and lunch and going to meetings and flying back to L.A. together. And, well, I'm almost out of time. We're going to get married next May. So it all started with an incomplete text. So keep your little things going. And thanks for letting me share with you.
Thank you, Doug. Our next speaker is Michael.
Michael, I'm an alcoholic. I'm also a recovering techno geek. I'm going to ask for your indulgence today. I've got some notes here because there's a lot of dates and times and places and stuff I haven't thought about in quite some time. Like any good AA talk, I thought I'd put this together about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. When I got involved with this stuff, you had two colors, green or orange. Those were the screen colors. And you had two speeds, 110 and 300 baud. About as fast as you type, Ned. The processor I had back then was an 8080. Now, if you're a real sport, you could throw a V20 chip on there and have an 8088 clone. It ran at 2 megahertz. My phone's 1,000 times faster than that. Who would have thought? But anyway, it's a wild trip. My first experience with the online world began back in the early 80s when I lived down in San Diego. I was a member of the San Diego Computer Society. My sponsor down there drugged me every place he went, so that's where I went. I'd become a computer professional in the mid-70s, so I got to spend a lot of time sitting around with breadboards and wire wrap guns and soldering irons and blowing stuff up to see if it would work. And I was hooked on it. You know, I was a Heathkit kid. So anyway, shortly after doing all of that, I had enough shekels saved up. I got me an RGB monitor, red, green, and blue. Weighed about 400 pounds and was about 15 inches wide. You had to call beacons just to get the damn thing moved from one room to the other. So I just recently moved back up to the San Francisco area where I was from, and I found one of those weekly throwaway newspapers, and it had just a real simple little ad in there. It said Recovery BBS with a local phone number. I said, what the hell, you know? Try dialing this thing up and see what happens. And there's online AA for the first time. And I got in there, a little trial and error, started fooling around, and it made me really begin to wonder, you know, how I was going to tie my recovery program to this shiny little machine that I fool around with in the corner and kick and scream because it only did what I told it to do rather than what I wanted it to do. So the backstory to all of this is a fellow by the name of Bob Kay had just recently got out of a residential treatment program at San Francisco Henry Olaf House. He had an IBM PC Junior and had two floppy drives, no hard drive in it. And he had come up with some forum BBS software, and he says, you know what, I want to create an online meeting. And now the adventure began at that point. This BBS was a single-threaded, one person at a time, somebody introduces a topic and sits and waits for the next guy to call and comment on it, kind of bored. And thus a new means of sharing our experience, strength, and hope was born. This was a training ground for online etiquette for all of us. None of us knew anything about, you know, how do you do this thing. And so there was more than just a trial and error involved. You know, you had to see the whole new world through a new pair of glasses. What happened? Well, there was Rich W. He started the online group Steps of DC in late 1983. And Recovery BBS, Rich K. started on the 4th of July, 1986. And on January the 25th, 1987, Rich and Bob forged a link that became the Recovery Echo. And I became involved with that in 1986. This was, or it tried to be, guided by AA principles, but was not seen as a meeting format-wise, but merely a place for people to share their experience, strength, and hope with their struggles with and their recovery from alcoholism. And Bob K.'s vision was to have a meeting that was online, and it had the look and the feel of the ones that we went to on a regular daily basis. And we wanted to have this as a regular online AA group, and we had to go through a lot of growing pains to figure out how do you do that. And we elected online officers, and we had to figure out how to collect a seventh tradition. And after finally convincing one of the staffers at General Service, we got a group number. We were the first group to have an online group with a real AA group number. And so we decided to get together for our first face-to-face meeting, and we decided to wear red carnations so that we would know what each other looked like, because we were spread out all over Northern California at that time. So Penny P. of Livermore, she dubbed us the Carnation Kids, and the name stuck. So after that, in 1990, we went to the first international convention meeting for online recovery, and the fire marshal came into that meeting and shut it down temporarily until they got enough people out of that room to restart that meeting. So quite a lot of folks showed up. I mean, it was just absolutely shocking. You know, this was the first time that I saw the enormity of the potential for online AA. And the room was just absolutely packed. And when we got out of there, we went outside. There was a very large tree out there, and we continued that meeting. We named that the meeting tree. And we had people from all over the country at that. But I think one important point to note about that meeting, although the room was completely full, there didn't seem to be the groundswell of support or interest for online Alcoholics Anonymous meetings at that time. You know, this whole concept really seemed to catch on with the hobbyist AA member rather than the AA member that had a computer. You know, it just wasn't thought in those terms. But from that meeting, a lot of very good, wonderful friendships were formed. And over these years, a lot of us had traveled cross-country and whatnot. One of the guys, Tim S., you know, he had what we dubbed as the Lost in America tour. When he was going to move from San Francisco to Connecticut, he packed all his stuff up in his car and zigzagged all over the country, meeting people that we knew from online. And then shortly after that, Chuck B. from Brea, Ohio, and his wife Barb came out to California, and they stayed with me. We had never met prior to that. And I've stopped by and saw my friend Linda G. in Mexico, Missouri, and Marge C. in Nashville, and my friends Ziggy and Gloria when they were in D.C., and Tim, he moves around a lot. I've seen him in Portland, San Francisco, and Seattle. And Penny and I, you know, we became really good friends, and we go to a lot of meetings together. We participated in a couple of conferences this year. We've got members like Arky in Honolulu all the way to more recent Montreal. So we've got a lot of folks that have hung together for all these years. And back to the history lesson here. Bob remained as a SysOp until his health failed him in the latter part of 88, and then Tim took that over until he moved cross-country and back again in 91. And then Rich G., who was our resident Al-Anon, became the third SysOp because he was the only one that had the hardware that could run this stuff. And then Tim, once he got planted up in the Pacific Northwest, started Recovery Northwest, which was an echo of the same board. And then Joe J. was a SysOp from Orange County and later from Oakland, and Tim picked up the 12 Steps Echo. And consultation with the 10 or 15 of us that were participants at the time developed the format and went online, and that became Zone 1. As a result, the group of SysOps, whose primary program was AA, concluded that there was a need that the Echo needed to be more closely focused on alcoholism based on the Big Book and the 12 Steps. So we pushed this all together, and it became SIP AA, or Singleness and Purpose AA, and then later became FidoNet. Marge C. of Nashville and Joe J. were the founders, and Joe was the Echo mail coordinator, and Marge was the first moderator. In a short period of time, this Echo spread from coast to coast and even went to the United Kingdom. With all of this additional strain on all the hardware, we thought it was time to upgrade and pass the hat, and so we moved all the way up to a 286 running desk view and traded in all our soda bottles and got a 9600 baud modem, and we were there. So the backbone got bigger and bigger and bigger. Then all of a sudden, the big eye internet popped up, kids. And gone forever were the days of all of this text string stuff. You know, we were starting to move big pieces of data around. And I thought, this is pretty cool. And so we started having all kinds of little online meetings popping up, like on AOL and CompuServe and AOL. And I used to get up every Sunday morning at 9 o'clock and get in on CompuServe and hit the thing. And you type the letter H if you wanted to raise your hand, and the moderator would tell you to sit down because you're talking too much. It's kind of hard to see through the tube, but we did it anyway. So, you know, in the beginning when we were starting to move all this data around, the University of Minnesota had a thing called Gopher, and it was all text-based. But, you know, as soon as you started getting up 9600 baud, they had pictures. Pictures, sparkly. This is really cool stuff. So, you know, we were going through all of this, and we had members from all over the world. And one guy, Bill, he was from Whitehorse up in the Yukon. It was his second meeting a week. They only had one up there. He was, you know, 300 miles to the next meeting. He wasn't going anywhere. And, you know, soon we were really given the keys to the kingdom when we got cable modem service all over the place. I was one of the lucky souls. I worked for one of the regional Bell operating companies. I was a manager of network engineering, so I got all that crap free and in a hurry. So I could get junk faster than you. But it was still junk. So what it's like now? You know, we talked a little bit about Facebook, and, you know, you got your chat rooms. My sponsor, Ned V, is here from Tucson, Arizona. Every morning I get up and I get a quote of the day from him, like, you know, 27 years in a program, I can't remember quotes, but he sends them to me, I read them. And Penny P. from Livermore, she's got an online list that she sends out that a lot of people read. I think she's up to something, thousands of people that she sends out a day. And, you know, there's just so many ways to stay hooked up, you know, the cell phones and netbooks and laptops and, you know, whatever you stick in the orifices to keep lit up. And we hooked up all the time. And, you know, if I'm out of town and I want to go to a meeting somewhere, you know, I pop the old phone up and I get the meeting schedule and I'm there. And I've never been a stranger anywhere. If I want to get birthday chips, I go online and got a marked page. I do business with a guy in Virginia. 2 days later, they're in a mailbox. 2 weeks ago, I went to the 63rd Annual Summer Conference at Northern California AA in San Jose, California. And I registered online, and I paid for it with PayPal. I mean, who was going to think that a few years ago? You know, they said, pay who? You ain't my pal. You know, get out of here. So, and like with this convention, you know, I registered online. I got my hotel online. I got my airline online. You know, everything was here except me online. And, you know, with the rise of the Internet and all this instantaneous stuff, you know, we've really seen a decline in the use of BBS systems around the country. And it's sort of been replaced by all the things I just cited in the last few minutes. But, you know, I think that BBS is like a comfortable old pair of tennis shoes. You know, you're not quite ready to get rid of. I'll put them back in the closet here. You know, and that's basically what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I have to tell you, I think this is tremendously important honor for me to be able to stand up here and share this with you. And I know I talk too long, but I really enjoy hearing my own voice. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Let's see. I'll just mention one of my own experiences. I'm Chuck. I'm an alcoholic from Los Angeles. I joined the Lamplighters in June of 1995 when somebody in my home group was speaking and said he was involved. And I was very active in the Lamplighters for some time, and then I became a secretary of my home group. And one of our members, who was visiting from Sydney, Australia, said that she would be in Los Angeles. And I sent her an email, and I said, well, as long as you're going to be here, you might as well speak. And so our very first speaker when I was secretary was from Sydney, Australia, and I just continued with that. Whoever was visiting Los Angeles would be invited to speak. 2 weeks later, I had Richard, who it turns out Michael knows, who is the manager of the AA Central Office in Richmond, California, and he came down and spoke. Arky, that Michael mentioned, came down from the Bay Area. Glondi was a doctor. She flew in from Washington, D.C. That's how I met Doug. And Nancy and Diana, who are here, and Irish Eddie is around someplace, and all these people have been such good friends for 15 years, and they've all spoken in my home group. And it's been a wonderful experience. It's been a very rich experience. belonging to online AA all these years, especially when we get together in person. And, you know, it's so nice to see so many people here in this room that I know from online AA. We have a microphone, and if anyone would like to go to the microphone in the central corridor, it's available to you if you would like to share something about your experience in online AA.
Hello, my name's Ross. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ross.
My sobriety date's the 14th of April, 1974. My home group's Ballarat. It's 100 kilometres from Melbourne. I started with the mum group and the dad group. I figured I'd need both of them in 1996. And my concern is with anonymity, because when I write to those groups, my full name does come up. And I wondered if there's anybody here more technological than me that can explain how you can avoid that. Also, I'm not critical of the groups. They've helped me. They've been lifesavers. But if there are photographs published, is there a way of making them private just to members of that group, if anybody can help me with those questions? Also, what I've noticed is that in the 90s, there was a lot of flaming, criticising, but there seems to be a lot less of that these days. Thanks.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Homer Miller. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. My sobriety date is December the 10th, 1995. I got involved in the online intergroup of Alcoholics Anonymous as a result of the Grapevine article in November 2005, and the article said, "E-stepping, are we doing enough?" I'd just become DCM, and I said, "Man, I don't know anything about that." So I started exploring. And there is an intergroup, and I've got some cards. The other thing I'll tell you, in the Grand Hyatt on the fourth floor, there are three hospitality suites, one for the online intergroup. And it's an intergroup just like the intergroup in your hometown. We have a 12-step committee, which I'll talk about in a minute. We have all the other functions. We have a meeting directory. That group, that intergroup, has over 250 meetings. I'm sorry, 250 groups registered. And each of those groups has an intergroup representative that participates in a monthly meeting. On the online answering service, we're called the Steppers, 12-steppers. When I started in 2005, we were getting three a day, three requests. About a year and a half later, South Africa changed their website, made it simple, as our friend said. It went to six a day. GSO, a year and a half ago, added the online intergroup to their website on the How to Find Meetings link. It went to 10 a day. And our trusted web servant changed our website back in February, just a simple change, and we increased the number of requests that we get for help from 10 to 20 to 25 a day. That's between 7,500 and 8,000 requests for help a year. Okay? A lot of people are reaching out because they like the added level of anonymity. One key statistic that balances that. If you look at the survey today about membership, two-thirds of the AA memberships are male in the U.S. and Canada. 70 to 75% of our requests come from females. And I'm not going to purport to know why that's true, but I know two things. I've yet to have a man write back to me after we exchange a few emails and said, "My name is not Homer, it's James." 10 to 15% of the women that if I'll exchange more than three emails with, they'll write back and say, "My name is not Kelly, it's Jane." Okay? And so there is a tremendous opportunity for carrying the message. You know, you can join that, our Steppers Committee. All you have to do is go to online intergroup of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you can send a link. I've got some business cards that I picked up from our suite, and I'll be setting up at the front, and I've got some extra of my own business cards. But it is a wonderful opportunity, and I would invite you to come over to the Grand Hyatt, the Crockett Rooms A, B, C, and D. Thank you.
Hey, Dig Alcoholics. I wanted to address Russ.
Thank you.
Russ. You know, with a lot of these meetings and formats, a lot of people have created their own scripts or PHP or whatever it is they're running in right now, you know, on whatever type of servers. And, you know, with a lot of formats, you run the gauntlet of everyone had a different idea of what's going to be working. So I won't even address those. But specifically with, like, Facebook and MySpace, if you, like, our organization, FICCIPAW, which is the Florida Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous, we regularly post pictures and a lot of other things. If you go into your profile and create a group of friends, call it AA Friends, okay, and put friends in that group, and then you post a and hit save, and then when you post a picture, there'll be a little icon at the bottom, and you can select who it should be visible to. Only those people will see it. So your friends, your employers, other people will never see it.
Thank you. Hi, my name's David. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Stepson St Kilda Group in Melbourne, Australia. I look after a website that lists all the meetings in Melbourne and Victoria, and always amused when I go to an AA meeting and I'm talking to a newcomer and say, do you want your meetings book? And they say, I don't want a meetings book. I've got it all here on my phone right next to me. And that makes me feel, you know, because I do a bit of, for me, it's a great way to do service. I can do it any time of the day or night, just doing a bit of maintenance on the website and stuff like that. I'm also really into the Twitter and do a bit of AA on the Twitter. I would be Twittering during that, would have been Twittering during this meeting, but I can't get a signal down here. And my wife's sitting next to me and she would, yeah, doesn't like me doing that. For a while I was involved with a conference in Melbourne called the Melbourne AA Steps Weekend, and we recorded all the speakers and put them up on the web site called stepsweekend.aagroup.org.au. And a nice thing happened one day. There's someone from California tweeted that they were looking into step two. They wanted to know about step two. And someone from Ireland tweeted back, go to this website, listen to Gina talk about step two. And I knew that was fantastic. You know, the people from all over the world were hearing those speakers from there. This idea of being able to do service in that way. You know, I don't do online meetings, but having a bit of geek skills, you know, like some of the speakers we've heard today, it means that I've got a way of helping other people connect, and that helps me to stay sober. Thanks for letting me share.
My name is Tandy. I'm an alcoholic. I have sort of a question. I'm a DCM from Alaska, and we've been looking at how we can connect up our GSRs to our area meetings. In Alaska, we don't have a lot of roads. It's really expensive to fly from one place to another, and we're just wondering if there are any other areas that are doing any of that kind of work. We would love to hear from you. Thank you.
Okay, good. I'm Betsy. I'm an alcoholic in San Diego, California. I got sober in 2003. 4 days after I put down my drink, I found my way, I'm very nervous, into the local AA meetings. 10 days after I got sober, I found my way into online AA meetings. I'm probably here, nervous at this microphone, because I stayed sober, because online AA meetings and local meetings too. Behind those meetings are wonderful people, wonderful sober AA members who talk online. I met Dennis from Alabama, Chris from Hawaii, Anne from Finland, now Estonia. These folks held my hand. They held my hand at 2 a.m. when sleep evaded me. They told me it would be all right. And it was all right. They told me to get a sponsor. They cheered when I got a sponsor. I laughed at your story of Ari, because I've been there. I have been that person. I have walked into online AA chat rooms, and I've told them I got a sponsor, and they cheered for me. 6 years later, almost 7 years later, I'm still sober. I'm still somewhat active online. I have 12-stepped with Homer on that 12-step list, and that's an incredible experience, trying to help give back to someone else the opportunity that those of you who came before me gave to me. Thank you.
Hey, everybody, I'm Randy. I'm an alcoholic. Sobriety date, December 17th, 1981. You forgot all us trash 80 geeks out here, so there are a few of us. I'm here, and I'm listening, and I wanted to get up and talk for just a minute just because I'm a DCM in Area 57, which is the whole state of Oklahoma. And we are struggling with this part of this issue, which is anonymity online. And we held a workshop about 2 weeks ago on this particular topic. And first of all, I want to say I think we have to be online. That's where people are today. My kids, they don't call their friends; they text them. They get to them on Facebook and. Making a phone call to talk to somebody is like the last thing they'll do. I mean, you have to be like bleeding and almost dead to call. And that's just the way the kids are these days. I mean, and I love that. But I'm the same way, My wife goes to look up a phone number. She goes and grabs the yellow pages, and I'm like, what the hell are you doing? You got Google right here, People find us that way, and that's the way where we need to find them. That's where we need to be. If that's where they're looking, we need to be there. I think the struggle that we come up with all the time is how do we continue to meet our responsibilities to the traditions while living in an environment like the internet. One of the things that Sean and I have talked about is the issue. Simple matter. If you go to iTunes and type in AA speaker, you will be amazed at what you find there. And everyone who gets up in front of a microphone. In an AA meeting where they're doing recording, needs to understand that their voice will be on iTunes at some point. And it's not because you want it to be there or I want it to be there. It's because someone will take that CD and someone we don't know, maybe someone in this room, maybe someone who got this CD from somebody else, and they will rip it and they will put it up. So every time I get in front of a microphone, I have to be aware of that, and I have to be able to say, my name is Randy, I'm an alcoholic. And not my name is Randy, what's my last name, that's breaking anonymity right there. And that's just reality, The other reality is, like you were talking about pictures, digital information, once you digitize information, put it on the internet, you've lost control of it, and that's reality. Ask any rock star who's taken their shirt off in an inappropriate time, like the young female singer from some group, I forget the name of the group, but she thought she was just taking a picture, sent it to a friend, 3 weeks later she's on the cover of Rolling Stone, with the little tape mark across her and stuff. That's the reality. Pictures, you put them up, they're out of your control, and you have to be very careful. So in many respects, we all have to live with that reality and behave in a manner respecting that. The picture you talked about, where someone took a picture of you in a situation that you probably wouldn't want to see published everywhere because it breaks your anonymity, is something that every one of us has to deal with on a constant and daily basis. So we as are dealing with this issue of anonymity online in that type of environment, and the reality is we don't have real good answers. I mean, for this gentleman, I don't know what the answer is. The other problem is, as most of you know who deal with Facebook and really look at what Facebook is doing, they have made significant changes in their policy 3 times just since Christmas, and not minor little tweaks, but major changes to the privacy policy. The technology is moving so fast that what worked today is not going to work tomorrow. I mean, 3 years ago we've been having the conversation about how we stay anonymous on Yahoo groups, and they don't exist anymore. 5 years ago, that was the best technology in the world for what Facebook does today. And I'd be willing to bet $100 right now that when we meet again in 5 years, it's not going to be Facebook. It's going to be something else. The problem remains, though, how do we behave in a manner that respects our traditions, regardless of what the technology is? And that's the thing that we have to look at and deal with. And I think it's something that, we've got to struggle with. And I know us in Area 57, we're struggling with it mightily right now. And if you guys are doing the same struggle, I'm very interested in hearing and talking with you, because I'm pretty certain that we're going to come up with some answers that you won't, and you're going to come up with some answers that we won't. And between us all, we can probably come up with some that work for all of us. Thanks.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ed. About maybe 16 months ago, I started saying, incorporating in my prayers the line on page 77 in the Big Book, that God show me how I can fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. And what came up was to get a group on Facebook. I wanted to. The anonymity tradition is so important. And what is so much, I find what's so much misunderstood about the anonymity tradition, it's not about me or you, it's about us. It's about the greater good. And the level, Dr. Bob talked about the exact level where we break and where we don't. And so I called up GSO. And just like I've seen in AA's writings, GSO doesn't say, you should do this and you shouldn't do that. They say, our experience suggests that... ... We've found that this, but you're perfectly free to do anything you want. And they were most helpful. So I spent a good hour with them on the phone before I created these two groups. And one is called The Big Book. And it's a wonderful discussion. It's a closed private group. And on the main wall that the general public, anyone on Facebook can see, has nothing on there that says Alcoholics Anonymous or AA. There's a picture of a Big Book, a first edition Big Book, with the words Alcoholics Anonymous taken right off it. It's a yellow and blue book. And one group is for Big Book discussion, and then the Big Book Daily Quote group is for a quote we mailed to you once a day. And and on the wall, there's nothing that describes AA at all. And I talk a little about anonymity on there as well. And it's been absolutely wonderful. We've got over 3,600 members of the Big Book group, and just people all over the world. I've met the most wonderful people. And open it up to, I through more prayer, I the end of last year, I put out a call for more co-admins. And 50 said they wanted to do it, and I took about a month to sort of sift through all the profiles and pray, and, what do we want the vision of this to be? We've got four co-admins now. I'm from Canada, and a couple from the U.S., and one from London, England. We're truly international. And I'm amazed today. The other co-admin, Joe, him and I are talking. He picks me up in Austin, and we've been talking throughout the last few months. And I've got a, as soon as I see him, big hug. I'd never met him before, just online, but it's so rewarding. I cannot tell you in terms of service how rewarding it is. I've got just one last thing. I've got a sponsee, and he was going to business. I'm from London, Ontario, Canada, and he was going on business to London, England. And I said, well, I know a guy out there, a friend of Bill's. And I hooked him up beforehand. They have dinner and a meeting. And it's just, a few years ago, this is probably 10 years ago, I went on a trip to Peru. So I'm on my way to Peru. But online group, I emailed the group. I say, does anyone know a member in Peru? And this guy from Scotland emails me back an hour later. In a city of 8 million people, I don't know anyone, I found a friend of Bill's. So... it's just wonderful, this medium, and I wonder what it would be like if Phil and Bob had this, Very exciting. Big Book Daily Quote. Yeah, and they're both closed private groups. Your anonymity is fully protected on those. And I got to admit, though, even though I've said all this and I've talked with GSO, I'm still not quite sure I've got the anonymity levels right. I still don't feel 100% about it. I've had members say to me, you're too anonymous. I've had other members say to me, you're not anonymous enough. So I still don't know if I've got it right, and that's why I'm interested in going into these kind of things. So, thanks.
My name is John. I'm an alcoholic. And my home group is the Saturday Night Live group of Alcoholics Anonymous in San Jose, California. And we have a website. We decided a couple of years ago to kind of jump on board and join the Internet, if you will, or just, get some technology out there. And we created a website for our home group. But we do not have chat rooms. We do not have a place where people can exchange. It's not like an online meeting. It's an information-only tool. It's just another tool that's available for people coming into town. If they're looking for meetings, if they're looking for information, It's there on our website. And we formatted it based upon the guidelines that we found in New York and on the AA.org website. And that's the way we did things. And it seems to be working okay. It's certainly not as robust as some of the things that you've been talking about. But, that just is way beyond me, even though we're in the middle of Silicon Valley. But it works, and it's an outstanding tool. One of the things that I want to address, and this is just my own personal thing, is the social networking websites. Obviously, Facebook is the topic of discussion these days. And I think it's a responsibility of those of us that have been around for a while to talk to those that have not been. And it boils down to that. Without hammering people or without treating them, like they don't know what the hell they're doing or any of that kinds of stuff, but in a very gentle way to share with people that, you know what, maybe that information wasn't quite appropriate to paste on that or post on that page. Or maybe that information about you reflects something about me that I didn't want posted on that page. And, I know that there are privacy issues or, there's ways to set all that up and set that group up and be exclusive over here. But I don't know if I want to, maybe it's my personal thing. I don't know if I want to go through all that. I would just prefer if we're all in a public place, which in my opinion, Facebook is a public place, that we just respect each other's anonymity as well as our own. And that way we don't have a lot of issues regarding it. There are ways to say what we need to say. And, it's as an example, when I said that I was coming to San Antonio, I just simply said, I'm coming to meet 60,000 of my closest friends and left it at that. And sure, there are people in my life that, that are not members, many, many people are not members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I see them face up and they want to talk about that, I will talk about that with them one-on-one. And there are people that I know that are new coming into the program that don't know any of this. They just spew AA all over the internet, and it's really necessary, I think, for those of us that have been around for a while to talk to them one-on-one and say, look, maybe that wasn't appropriate. So thanks for letting me share.
My name is Hector, and I'm an alcoholic and a young person. And I didn't start texting until about 4 or 5 years ago. And yeah. And here's the reason why I started texting. It's because I started dating. And the thing about texting is this. It's very impersonal. Very impersonal. It's easy to get to speak to somebody and be blunt and be anonymous and be impersonal. And there's some. I was just recalling right now when we're talking about online meetings about something in the book. I don't know if I'm not sure if it's still printed on it, but it used to say morning to morning or face to face. You could find the program Alcoholics Anonymous anywhere. But I'm recalling my first 3-4 months of sobriety. I didn't know how to drive. I didn't know how to do anything. And then I had a sin to my name. And still, I was able to make a meeting every day of my sobriety, a person-to-person meeting every day of my sobriety. Because somebody in the program went and stepped out of their way in order to pick me up every single day. Somebody in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to drive. And the reason why they taught me was because my sponsor told me, alright, it's time to stop taking, it's time to start giving. That's the only reason. I would have been okay without driving. I was perfectly content and I had no intention of actually growing. I don't know. The reason why I go online is out of convenience. That's the reason why I go online. I really believe that it's important, like you just shared, to note that those programs, those things are like talking outside of a meeting, smoking a cigarette outside of a meeting. That's what they are. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous is to be found in the 12 steps and one-to-one with the sponsor and all that stuff. And as far as how to keep other people from not breaking your anonymity, I got to tell you, shoot. It's easy for me to stand in a soapbox and preach, you know, about the traditions. I love the traditions. I fell in love with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous going through the traditions meeting. You know, that's where I fell in love with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, going through the traditions meetings and seeing that there's something to this. And there's some very important fundamentals to be found inside of the traditions. But I can't preach it. It's something that I learned. It's like the steps. It's got to be personal to me, and I got to hold it important. And I don't know. I like to face pigeons. You know, that's what it comes down to. It's the way I see it. It's not an easy thing to do, but you know, we got a room for error thanks to the traditions. You know, thanks.
David Alcoholic from Los Angeles and part of Doug's morning meeting. I think the issue of the violation of anonymity is not going to be solved in cyberspace. It's going to be solved in our meeting rooms and us passing the message on to the people that come in behind us. I've only been involved in Facebook about a year, and I'm approaching 2,000 Facebook friends. And if you Google my name in Los Angeles in politics, it's everywhere. And I have never been afraid of someone else breaking my anonymity, because it's been my responsibility not to break your anonymity. And that the people that I work with and that I'm with in meetings, I want to make sure that they understand why anonymity is so important. And so all of us going back that have been here today, you know, that's our responsibility, is that we need to continue to pass on what was freely given to us. And I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Jonathan Alcoholic. I got a question for the panel. I do audio recording. I've been doing it for the last 7 years. Some of you that are on the panel, I've recorded you multiple times. What is a respectable way to deal with that media and the internet? It's a question I've debated a lot. I have an immense catalog. It's a resource. I've heard of a lot of people that say that if it wasn't for an audio recording that they had heard, you know, that they may not have the recovery that they have today if they hadn't heard so-and-so from this area or that area. What is a responsible and ethical way to deal with this media? It's a question. And to make it available. Anyone want to answer?
My name is Doug Rowell. I'm a grateful alcoholic.
Doug.
And Jonathan, this question comes up a lot. And the fact is, I think especially those of us who use our first and last name in the fellowship, as Dr. Bob suggested that we do, we have no control of where those recordings are going to go. And I don't think we really can be concerned about it. If someone... it was mentioned of taking one of those recordings and putting it on iTunes. We don't have any control over that. I wish that iTunes and some of the press, radio, films, et cetera, media would be more respectful of that, but we can't depend on them either. Anytime that I use my name, my full name as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and they're generally speaker meetings and generally open speaker meetings. But I don't break my anonymity at the public level. If someone else wants to break my anonymity at the public level, I wish they wouldn't, but I still have to make it available to the fellowship, and that's the way I feel, and that's the way I think people who record speakers have to do too, make it available to the fellowship, and which if you're too careful about making... about being too anonymous within the fellowship, I think will hurt the fellowship. So I think we just have to make it available to the fellowship, and then if it gets out into the public, it's too bad, but it's not a break.
Diego Alcoholic.
Diego.
You know, I use my first name, and I don't use my last name, because I'm well aware that somebody might break my anonymity inadvertently I think from my own heart, the only thing I would ask anyone that ever attends a meeting with me and does anything is search your heart, talk to your sponsor, pray about it. You'll come to the right answer. And the answer you come with, I'm okay with, because I only use my first name. I want to sidetrack one thing for the lady from Alaska. If you want to talk to me afterwards, I'll talk to you about something about what our area assembly, Area 14, is doing that's similar to that.
Thank you.
I'm Jim. I'm an alcoholic. And when I know I'm being recorded, I do not use my last name. In general service, I always use my last name. In regular meetings that are not being recorded, I use my last name. But if I know that I'm being memorized to tape like this meeting, I just don't use my last name. Now, every once in a while, I forget that. But essentially, that's what I attempt to do, because it is, if it's getting recorded, it's at some point going to get out there. And so it's up to us to try to remember that if it's getting recorded, not use our last names. But in my home group, it doesn't get recorded. I use my last name all the time.
I'm Scott. I'm an alcoholic. I'm involved with StepChat, although I don't know if anybody else here does that. If they do, I always like to talk to them. I like to talk to them after the meeting. What I'm up here for is maybe this is sort of against the grain, but I know I could probably have some people agree with me. The technology tends to be a big distraction for me. I've deactivated Facebook 3 times. I dropped all my friends, and only one of my friends brought it up. You know, so I don't know how much they're friends, but I've always been a face-to-face person. I did find StepChat very valuable one night. I was sharing with some of the people up here. It was like 10:30 at night, and I had one of that stuff on my mind that gave me that sick feeling in the stomach, and I shared it with one of my friends on StepChat, and it was really, really good for me. I still haven't been texting yet. I had to ask somebody what this bulletin board system, what the BBS meant up there. I don't know if I'm the only one that didn't know that, but bulletin board system, BBS, and flaming, I really didn't know what that was. It's sort of a weird word, but somebody said that's when you're mean to somebody online. So anyway, I'm just really grateful to be here. I've been in Charlottesville, Virginia since the early 90s, and I started off in Pennsylvania. I have a lot of fond memories of the face-to-face meetings, and I think I would want to encourage somebody who's into their smartphone or their laptop, if they feel it's an obstacle, put it down, like Doug was saying, put it down, even if you don't want to put it down. Because for me, I'm very distractible, and I'm very grateful to be here. Thank you.
Hi, I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, John. Sobriety date, December 7th, 1971, and member of the Early Risers group in the cradle of AA civilization, the Green Mountain State of Vermont. I just wanted to say a word about the online intergroup. I've been a member of the Steppers Committee for about 2.5 years, and it's just been the most wonderful development in my sobriety. I was grieving the loss of my wife. She died a few years ago, and I needed to take a serious look at my AA program and my home group and the meetings I was going to and sponsor and all the things that you have to, you know, take a look at. But somebody suggested the online intergroup. I had a Steppers Committee where you could actually share your experience, strength, and hope with people who are reaching out for help. And like Homer just said, we're receiving calls for help at the rate of 7,000 or 8,000 per year, which is a lot of people reaching out for help. And if you've been 12-stepping as long as I have, you may remember the day before the detoxes and before the treatment centers and before the rehabs, where we were getting a lot of AA calls for help from people who had never even heard of it before. And that day is gone, because, you know, a lot of times we don't get 12-step calls hardly at all, or not very many people who haven't already been through the mill. However, what we get over the Internet, calls for help from our link, which is linked around the world, people have never really been to AA, and you get first shot at them. And you can reach into your bag of experience, the things that you have done, that you forgot about. You never even talked about at a meeting, things that have helped you, and you can share that with the other person. And that person receiving it can not read it, or they can read it. They can print it out. They can save it. They can read it later. They can pass it to somebody else. They can come back to it. They can reply back to you. It's a wonderful experience to be in this Steppers Committee because it's just like getting, you know, half a dozen 12-step calls handed to you every day, you know, and you can do what you can do. I'm in awe at the amount of work that some of the members put in. Homer is one of them that it's just unbelievable how much work that he does. I try to answer one or two a day if I, you know, possibly can. That's my goal. But the amount of service you can put in, you know, all you can do is all you can do, but all you can do is enough. And so I just have to say what a wonderful development the online experience has been for me, kind of late in my sobriety, I guess you might say. So anyway, thanks.
We only have time for a couple of more, please.
Well, I'm glad I made it under the wire. My name's Tom, and I'm an alcoholic. Sobriety date 82881. That's how I can pretty well remember it. I'm going to have a tough time with this because I always use my last name. I have no anonymity. I choose to do that. And when I give a talk, before the recording goes on, I give my last name and I spell it because it's an unusual spelling. And I want people to find me in the phone book if they need me. So I'm very, very clear about that. But I'm at this microphone to tell you that at the end of this month, a subcommittee of the PI committee of AA will be working on developing a draft text on the topic of anonymity in a digital age for the conference-approved pamphlet Understanding Anonymity. So if you think we're not thinking about it and trying to do something about it, we are. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Mary, and I am an alcoholic. And the panel is great. Thank you all very much. I'm not involved in online AA as such, just because I don't have the patience for it. And I'd actually rather get out to a meeting. But as far, you know, I asked my daughter a couple years ago how my grandchildren were, and she said, if you want to find out, join Facebook. So I joined Facebook. And I have friends in Facebook right now. Don't have anyone that's a friend that either isn't in the fellowship or no, they all know I'm in the fellowship or they're in the fellowship. But, you know, I'm not going to add any friends that aren't in the fellowship or that don't know that I am because of the way my friends go on and on about AA on Facebook. And I went to a similar workshop in, I don't remember if it was Minneapolis or Toronto, but I think it was Minneapolis, and they said, if it's something you can't print in the newspaper, don't put it online. And I feel very strongly about that. And there are a lot of touchy questions around this. A friend of mine put out on Facebook, I'm going to the AA International Convention. Who else is going? And it upset me, and I practiced restraint of tongue and pen and didn't say anything to him until today, which was good. But another friend of mine emailed him and said, I'm anonymous. I've got parents groups and I've got, you know, professional groups that I'm friends with. You know, I'm just not going to deal, you know, stop it. And so I think I'm really glad that the PI committee is talking about it. I'm glad we're talking about it because I just think it's something that we're learning about this just the way the pioneers did. You know, we didn't have the advantage of being there 75 years ago and, you know, figuring out how to do it, but we get to figure this stuff out by talking to each other. So thanks again.
Alcoholic name Homer, and I'll get it right this time. I didn't say my last name. I apologize for that. I forgot it was being recorded. I was nervous. But the basic starting point is for the thing about Internet is the guidelines, and someone else mentioned that, at AA.org. Click on guidelines, and there's one in there for Internet, and it gives you the framework. It doesn't give you the answer, and it says social media is public media. You know, but that is a very valuable thing. And, you know, I would encourage you to have workshops about anonymity online if you don't know anything about it. That's the way we learn it, like meetings like this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you to everybody who participated. And I'd like to thank our speakers, Diego, Doug, and Michael. Thank you. Thank you so much. And after a moment of silence for the alcoholic who still suffers, I'd like to ask Ivania to lead us in the serenity prayer.